Okay, we're taping today is March 15th. This is Man and Society. We're in the Choveret number 23. Now, notice a trend that's happening with all these very disparate types of mitzvahs. Right? We started off with Kedoshim Tiyu, the pillars of our strong community is Shabbos and parents. Right? This has right? And then Parshas Kedoshim very quickly takes on a broad array of direction. Right? It says, be careful with making the Avodah Zarah, be careful of turning to anything irrational like Elilim for Avodah Zarah. Then it mentions Korbanos. It says on the third day, make sure you don't eat any of these Korbanos, right? Remember when we took 6 minutes? People, and I mentioned to you Shmuel David Lutzato, Shadal, who says, remember, all the components have to have salt for an obvious practical reason, because it needs to preserve the meat. This meat is taken, you don't have refrigeration then. We need to preserve the meat. Yeast and honey is going to make it spoil more quickly. So you want to preserve it. If you eat it on the third day, the chilul will be, remember the Lashon used, the Torah uses, the chilul will be, someone's going to get sick, and they're getting sick. What are they going to think of kachin? Right? Kachim should be a bracha in your stomach. You eat with mustard, with a sandwich, and a knish, and a nice soda. Right? We don't want you to get sick over kachim. So Shadal explains it this way. Right? He says unequivocally, Parsha Shmini, the kashrus laws are not health oriented alone. The people in the Middle East think that camel is the most wonderful food. And they're mashbiach, they're more than any other food. It's just not kosher because Hashem said so. It's not a question of health necessarily. Lots of kosher foods that are unhealthy, lots of unkosher foods that are healthy. It is more than that. But there could be some practical points to it as well. The salt obviously has a point to it, right? So if you would think, well, why don't you just give it to a poor person? Right? Let me at least give us the extra meat that's left over on the third day to a poor person, right? So let it be known that I still care about poor people. The next mitzvahs are 8 mitzvahs, right? About leket and shikha and peya and peret and leaving stuff behind for the poor. Okay, that's what we left. Right? Okay, clear. Please make sure to get last class. We covered quite a bit of ground last time. Okay. All right. So. So Ibn Ezra is number 23. What is the connection after you tell me about leaving leket shikha and peah? The Torah's next mitzvah is lo tignob. Don't steal. We're in pasuk yudah. Okay. So again, the fact that this is Ibn Ezra is really so significant, because you don't expect this kind of thing from such a pashtan, right? Take a look at Ibn Ezra Pasuk Gadal. If everybody I have papers up here. Alright, so he says, Ki tzibi acharka, ki chen tzibi sicha, shetitain mishelcho el haniyim lichvod Hashem, af shetikach mashehu la'acherim. V'tam tignovu ki ero'eh macharish gam hu gonev. He's trying to say that if you don't give this leket shikha and peah to the poor, you're stealing from them. That's a phenomenal point. The Torah wants to create, remember as we spoke about vashranut, it wants to create a sense in your mind. We talked about competition and cooperation. It wants, in a capitalistic society, where the more talented, the more industrious, the more lucky, do better, right? What do we do with those unfortunate ones who don't have the talent, who don't have the good fortune, don't have the mazel, don't have the drive, right? So just understand, if you don't leave them that like the shikha and peah, you're stealing from them. And that's why it's written in plural, because if someone else doesn't get that farmer to leave some of his stuff behind, or someone else watches the stealing going on and doesn't say anything, he's also stealing. See, Ibn Ezra is trying to create a society, a working order here, where everyone takes part. Okay, that's why it's plural. And the Aseret Tzedibros, it's a different agenda. There it just says lo tignov. Right? Here it's lo tignovu.
Why should the bystander be in violation as well? And maybe not on the same level, we're not going to prosecute him. But the Torah considers you to be an accomplice.
That he should, what, steal it? Should he take it?
Go to the person and say, by the way, I just want to steal. Careful, don't get yourself back.
Which means stealing to pay up for himself.
In this case, if you see the owner of the field, what, clear away the whole field.
Right.
Someone watches him do that. If you don't try to mochiach him, which is a mitzvah later, you have a share in.
Is that not in process? Is that what we usually say for mochiach?
We'll see. When we get onto the pasuk mochiach tochiach is not misachal, we'll certainly see people who say that.
Right. Meaning, according to those people, it would be difficult to understand why specifically in this case it's used the plural in order to single out.
Yeah. Okay. We actually discussed singular plural last class. Why the previous pasuk looked v'kutzrechem esketira tzchem plural, then it continues in singular. So there too, David Yossi Hoffman made the point that a successful kitzira v'kutzrechem requires the whole nation to be in on this, individuals choose not to leave Peah, we'll deal with them, but what the cutoff number, I don't know what that is.
Rove? He uses that to show what?
He says that your zera will succeed because of the way the nation harvests, which is to leave over the Peah, to leave over the Lekah, to leave over the Shikha, right? I mentioned the Yerushalmi in Maseches Peah last class that views an owner of a field who goes back to the floor to pick up the leket that drops as a ganav. Or, even further, an owner of a field who covers the floor with a tablecloth or something, with any kind of covering, so that the poor actually never acquire. The poor never actually acquire the leket. They only acquire it when one or two strands, remember I told you, went through this process of cutting the grain with a sickle, one or two strands fall to the floor, the ani has acquired it at that point. Following, if you steal it, if you take it, the owner of the field is stealing. Right? If a bundle falls from when he puts it on the cart, and one or two bundles fall to the floor, the ani has acquired it.
How many bundles is that? Where does
the one or two bundles, one or two strands. The strands is called leket, the bundles are called shikha. Okay? And furthermore, Dr. Yaffin points out, as is obvious from the Sefer Chinuch, that this is such an important law that there's an asay and a los asay combined. Leave peah, don't not leave peah. Leave leket, don't not leave leket. Leave peah from grapes, don't not leave peah from grapes. Leave leket from grapes or peret, don't not leave leket from grapes. So that is a concentration of eight mitzvahs in those two psukim. The largest concentration of mitzvahs, so tight. Eight of 613 mitzvahs in two psukim. Okay? Alright, so that's number 23 is where Ibn Ezra says that not giving tzedakah, not leaving peah, not leaving leket, is kigonev min ha'aniyim. Okay? Remember I told you one interesting exception to a general rule of ha'motzi mechavirah v'olam arayah or oki mamona v'cheskes mari. When money is in doubt, always leave it in the hands of the person who has it, or who had it before, right? So what's the doubt in leket? The only way something is leket, it's a beautiful sugya in Yerushalmi Peah, at the end of the Sechta, and at the end of Chulin, where the doubt could be if you don't know how the strands came to the floor. It only belongs to the Ani, finish my sentence if you were here, it only belongs to Ani if it came to the floor from the worker harvesting. If it came to the floor from rain, or from animals that bit it all off in a kid, right? So, how do you know? Whenever there's a doubt, you give it to the poor. It belongs to the poor. So the Gemara asks, why? It's okay, my mother, the chesed is Mari. If it's in doubt, let the poor prove that I came down there from the worker, and let me take it. So
Now it says, that's what the pasuk in Tehillim means when it says, Ani varosh hatzdiku. Yesterday's Shir Shoyom. Ani varosh hatzdiku. Be mastik the poor. So the Gemara asks, how can you mastik the poor? It says, lo sedar nedal. Don't favor the poor. Then, no, not in din. If this fit in this rule here, not in a court. Court, you have to do justice. In this case, you take care of the poor. Alright? Let's go for it. Now, here, lo tiknovu from Dabar HaLamed b'inyano means a general prohibition of stealing. Because Rashi in Aseres HaDibro said that lo tiknov there means don't kidnap. Right? Okay? So that's number 24. Lo tiknovu, right? Rashi in the concept of Dabar HaLamed b'inyano. And this actually harks back to what we did in Mishpatim. You see what I wrote on the side? An example is Shmos Chafalef. The Eved Ivri is Ze Hanimkar B'Gnevaso. It's Machlokas. That's one of the questions you said you didn't get from in your homeworks. But I just mentioned, just in passing, with the Lozer and the Tanakama in the middle of the first paragraph of Maseches Kiddushin, there's Machlokas whether the Eved Ivri in Shmos and Devarim. Right, whether it's Nimkar B'Gnevaso, so, or could it possibly also be Mocher Asatzmo Mishum Dochako? He just sold himself into slavery. Right? So we learn that it's the Mocher Asatzmo, it's Nimkar B'Gnevaso, so, because a few psukim later in Mishpatim, remember we talked about the guy who can't pay back what he stole? And it says, V'imein lo v'nimkar b'gnevaso. That's called Dabar HaLamein B'inyono. That teaches that the Eved we were just talking about is named Karbik Nevaso. So, Lo Tiknovu in Aseres HaDibros. How does Dabar HaLamed b'inyano teach that it's talking about kidnapping? Maybe it means stealing. Come on, think about it. How does Dabar HaLamed b'inyano? Let its surrounding area teach what this means. Because what's the surrounding area of Lo Tiknovu in Aseres HaDibros?
Death penalties.
Death penalties. Tirtzach, Tinov. So Lotigno must mean stealing that'll get you killed. What's that? Kidnapping. What's the stealing here? Here it's talking about, because look at the context. L'techachashu l'techashu ishba amiso. So what's the difference between techachashu and techashu? Just from colloquially, come on. L'techachashu, don't contradict someone. I mean, not allowed to contradict. Yeah, you can if you're telling the truth. L'techachashu, but l'techashu. Don't contradict and don't. So, what would you think this is?
Lie.
So, contradict or lie, but. So, comes Rashi to tell us that they're both in a court of law. The techachashu means you lent me $100 without witnesses, and it's time to pay back. He comes, where's my money? He says, you never gave me this money. That's called lo techachashu. Right? Now, lo teshakru, right? Okay. The reason why this is here, according to Rashi, is because ein onshin elim kein mazhirin. I already had in Parshas Vayikra the punishment for someone who denies a loan, right? V'kichesh v'amiso, right? If I stole money from you and I'm caught, what's my fine? If I stole $100 from you and I'm caught, what's my fine? I have to pay $200. If you lend me $100 and I denied it, and then it's been found that I didn't borrow the money, how much do I owe you?
$125.
To pay a chomesh. That's what this is talking about here. That fine to pay the extra, I couldn't give him unless I warned him. Are you familiar with this concept? I think we talked about this concept in Mishpatim. Ein onshin ela im kein mazhira. There's no punishment that can accrue to a person for violation of the Torah law unless the punishment is meant, unless the mitzvah is mentioned twice. Got it? You cannot have a punishment. We'll see questions on this later in Parshas Kiddushin. But so where's the warning on on this $125 payment over a $100 loan? Right? The answer is right here. However, the much more interesting thing is, and this answers question number 26 on this page.
Shocker.
So that now let's look at number 28. 27, we answered in Ibn Ezra why this is in plural. In order to teach that if someone steals and you're in on it, you even know about it, that you're in on the stealing. By the way, if someone steals, a pasuk later in this parsha will say, you're even in violation of another din. If someone steals, you know about it, you don't say anything. What did that mean? Think of it. Lo sa'amod adam re'echa. Lo sa'amod adam re'echa. Don't stand by. See what the word dam there means? I would think that's only if he's going to die or get harmed. Damim means money. Lo sa'amod adam re'echa means don't stand by while even while something he owns is being threatened. Okay?
Could it mean both? Just a side question. Blood and money?
Okay, yeah. And economic. So of course, it means a lot more than two things.
Like, did we cover number 25 for Rashi?
No.
And did we finish explaining 24 and how Rashi applies to our own
money? Yeah, it's just that Loti Nobu, he has his money, his mom. As opposed to Seres Adibros, where it's Nefashos. Okay. According to, let's just look at Rashbam for just a moment. It says Lo Tignovu. Look at Rashbam with me. Lo Tignovu is Mammon. Okay, fine, simple enough. Lo Tichachashu, Kfiris HaMammon, HaMufkad B'yado. You gave me $100. I wouldn't call that stealing. Why wasn't that included in stealing? Because I came to the money with permission. Right? Stealing is when you came to the money with it, clearly without permission, no? Okay? Lo tishakru, mamon shehalvohu. Not mamon, you see, the Rashbam is looking for two different meanings of these three words, which all seem to be similar. What's the difference between lo techachashu and lo techakru? Isn't someone who is techachashu also being mishaker?
Well, no, I mean, you're telling him the truth. You're just putting pressure on him.
No, you gave me $100 to, anything that you, an object that you left in my place. This is also in the shomrim, right?
Right.
And now I deny that ever took place. Right? So I'm makhish your claim that I have something that belongs to you. Got it?
And now he's not denying it, he's just refusing to give it back.
No, if he says I agree that you gave it to me and but there's no, you know, if you're my witnesses, I'll deny it.
Let's say person A is paying person B to babysit. The person finishes babysitting and then you delay in giving that payment.
I'm not talking delay, I'm saying after the babysitting, he says, no, I'm sorry, you told me you were going to do this for free. That's the chachashu. So the Rishpam, here's my kasha on Rishpam. Rishpam, you're a kashtan. Why are you saying to shakru is just slightly different than to chachashu to warrant it, the extra word, right? You with me? That shakru is slightly different than the chachashu, but the chachashu is the case with this babysitter, and the shakru is where you just gave me $100 when it came time for me to pay back, and I said, I'll pay back Monday. It comes to me Monday, I said, you never gave me that money. Prove it. You're going to give it to me in front of witnesses. I don't even remember this. You want money for me? Prove it. That's the shakru, according to. Right? See, no, who is I took your money while you weren't looking? I pulled it out of your pocket. The chachashu with the shakru are cases where I didn't exactly do it that way, but I did it some other way where I'm taking money that's rightfully yours.
Is one worse than the other?
No, they're all in the same boat. So the question is, why is the Torah using three different words? Rashbam is not going to do biblical parallelism here. These are three different things, right? But what's clear is that even Rashbam, as Ibn Ezra included, Rashbam seems to be avoiding the obvious interpretation of the shakru, which is
lying.
Simple lying! You know what I'm saying?
The differentiation between
Did you make that call I asked you to make? And you say, oh yeah, I did. Are you lying? You know what I'm saying? She's not a tester, it's a chakra. And that's, why did Rosh Chan explain all three of these as regarding mamon? Or property? You understand my question? So on the page of Mikros Vidos, there's only one parshan that you can find that says that this is a general prohibition of lying. It's not Rashi, it's not Rashba, it's not even Ezra, it's Sforno. Sforno says, my opinion, this is a general prohibition on lying. Why do all these parshanim avoid this idea that this is a general prohibition of lying? First of all, look at the context of the pasuk. Okay, sir.
Why do we see that as within the parsha?
Of mamon, first of all. Second of all, but this is not the first place that we've had a prohibition of lying. The terminology appears in Parshas Mishpatim, albeit in the apodictic section of Mishpatim. I'm sure you're familiar with it. These are the three words. Midbar, Sheker, Tirchak. So there too, amazingly, Rashbam and Ezra, those are my benchmarks, because those are your two big Parshanim. Right? If Rashi says, that's okay, Rashi says it's Marcy. But Rashbam and Ibn Ezra, who are independent when they want to be, right? They both say that even in that custom in Parshas Mishpatim, Midbar Sheker Tirchak means don't lie in court. Why is everyone avoiding this rule that seems to be obvious that we just shouldn't be lying? Right? So that's what these sources are in number 28. Let's take a look, quick look, please. First of all, the Sefer HaChinuch. Shelo lishova al kfirat mamon. Shelo nishbal hakhashash nemar lo tishaku. Amazing. The Sefer HaChinuch understands lo tishakru to be a rule, like Rashi said, do not deny kfirat mamon.
Do not.
Shim kfar ish pikadon avar alo techachashu vin mishpalo ala kfira achar kach over alo below techachu. That was the mitzvah before this. Reish kafei was on lo techachashu. In other words, you loaned me a coat. There weren't any witnesses. When it came time, he says, look, I need my coat back. It's cold outside. I said, you never gave me a coat. So that I was just over in Lotachash. And if I go and you say, I want you to take a shvuah and bathe him. Right? I'm making a claim on you, and you can make a shvuah like that. Right? So he says, and if he makes the shvuah in court, he's over on Lotachash. Right?
Is that how everybody differentiates the two?
That's the same for him. Rashi seems to that allows him to be over a lot of chakra even before he gets to Beis Din, right? But the point of my saying, bringing the Sefer HaChinuch is that he, like Rashi, like Rashbam, and I'm telling you, Ibn Ezra also, seems to be avoiding lotus chakra as a general prohibition on lying. Right? Look at B. Midbar Sheker Tirchak, B and C. Same thing. Rashbam and Ibn Ezra in Parshas Mishpatim explain Midbar Sheker Chir Tirchak as a person lying in court. Now, if you see the whole pasuk that appears in Sefer Parshas Mishpatim, you'll see why. I quoted the whole pasuk in front of you. So let's see what it says. Midbar Sheker Tirchak v'nokiv tzadik al tarog ki lo atzdik rasha. Now tell me why even the Pashtunim understand Midrash Sheker Tirchak not to be a general prohibition against lying. Pay attention, you'll get it. And it's talking about lying in court. Because the main thing, you know, look at the Indian. The Pasuk is talking about a court case. And why would you leave Midrash Sheker Tirchak? Two times the Torah mentions it, right smack in the middle of Pesukim that talk about court cases. So what moral point do you get here? Ibn Ezra and Rashbam, see what they wrote, see Midbar Sheker as an Ezhara, I'm lying in court. If this is so because of the context of the... If this is because of the context of the Shmosu of the Mizayim, is it so, it should say, in the context of Ayikri Yud Tes Yud Aleph? The answer is yes. This pasuk also seems to be... Because if it's not in court, what difference is there between Techach Hashem and Teshatu? Surely Techach Hashem is also a sheker. These have to be different things. Sefer Chinuch counts each one as a separate Aveira. Right?
So how did Ibn Ezra and Rashbam differentiate between Teshatu and Techach Hashem?
The same way, perhaps, but that's not my concern right now. But they don't say that it is a general prohibition on lying.
Right.
Okay. But look, I told you the Sforno. You see the Sforno? Midvash Sheker Tirchak back in Mishpatim. Mikol davar shiuchal saveiv sheker. Kam ramzal habezahir b'tvarecha shemu mitocham yilamdu l'shaker. Well, this is so true, so typical of Sforno. He says so much in just a few words. What's the most important word in this short line of this Sforno? Be careful of how you speak and the sheker you say. As Chazal say, be careful with your words lest you learn to lie. Yilamed. The key point here is that lying becomes such a habitual thing. Get used to it, you'll find yourself lying over the most ridiculous things. That you're lying 50 times a day. Right? Take a look at top of page 20, of page, source number 28 at the top. I have more sources online. The Gemara in Yevamos starts to give our answer, source number one. Okay. Amar Abilai, Mishum Abilazar, Rav Shemel. Mutar lol adam shanos bidvar hashalom. A person is allowed to shanos. It doesn't say l'shaker. It uses a power kind of word. It says you're allowed to change the truth for the interest of peace. When it comes to peace and truth, peace is a higher ideal. Peace, shalom is God's name, MS is God's signature. You hear that? MS for shalom I love you. But when the two come one against the other, the Gemara gives three examples from Tanakh where truth bent to peace. The one that you're perhaps most familiar with of these three is She'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shonebo. Even God Himself once made a shinui in order to maintain peace between husband and wife. He even allows his name to be erased for the sotri. The sotri, that's a famous thing. But here's the point. When Sarah heard that she would have a baby, her initial reaction, according to the drash of this Gemara, was, how can I have a baby at this age? My husband is so old. That's what she said. My husband's so old. So when Hashem confronted Abraham with this disbelief, right? You know, in Sarah's defense, she didn't know who these three men were. She overheard, as Fabus in Shaddal, he says, probably Abraham had a lot of guests often, and when the guests left, they would say, oh, Mr. Shem, you should have a child. That's what it sounded like to her. She wasn't going to deny something that God, messenger of God, would say. Oh, good. I hope your words to God, your mouth to God, your God's ears, whatever. But she wouldn't make a kasha. It says tachesh sara, right? Afterwards, about what she said, because I didn't know they were angels. You know, I just thought they were giving a mishaberach. Like your guests always do when they leave. Your wife Sarah should give you a sara. They said, we'll give you a son. So you have to be careful how you make predictions, right? People come to my office to get, you know, and I give them a nice check for tzedakah, and they say, oh, your children will give you nachas, your children will give you a little long month. I say, well, you have nothing? Please do me a favor, just say my children ought to give me nachas. That I'll agree with. You know, I live my life, hopefully, that they will give me nachas, but I'm not a navi. Right? You know what I'm saying? Alright, so when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara says, changed Abraham's words. I'm sorry, changed Sarah's words. Come on, tune in. Changed Sarah's words from, how can I have a child? My husband is too old. How did God confront Abraham? He said, Abraham, why did Sarah say? Finish the sentence.
Based on That she's too old.
That she's too old to have a child. That's what it said. That's not what she said. She said, Avram's too old. See, now Hashem, as much as there might have been a beautiful relationship between Avram and Sarah, Hashem doesn't want Avram to think, oh, really? She thinks I'm too old to have a child, really? No. Okay, you see it? That's what she thinks of me. So what did Hashem do? Hashem basically told a fib. The Gemara doesn't use the Lashon of Sheker, it uses the Shinui, right? Okay, so the source number two is the source of Avos Rabbi Nassam, that when Aaron found two people who were arguing, a very famous source, remember what he would do?
He'd say, she wants to speak with you, and you'd say, be up to them.
Remember, each one would say, oh, you know how bad he feels that you're not getting along. He is so upset, he confided in me that he would be so... So, in the Medrash, that second guy says, really? Well, let him tell me that. Instead, he says, really, he feels that way? Oh, okay, well, tell him that I feel that way, too. And he goes back to the guy and says, do you know how bad that guy feels? I mean, really, that's what he said? Oh, he wants to really get along? Okay, all right. Just a thought question to you. If either one of them or both of them find out how they made up, and now that they're friends, do they go back to being enemies? No. They're friends already, right? You know, stop it. I asked you that question for a reason. Let's go to source number three. The Gemara asks in source number three, in the second paragraph of service, maybe you've learned it. Kesed Marakti Bifnei HaKala. What are you supposed to say when you dance before the Kala? Or what should you say to the Kala? Salah Simon Nunhei, you know, Ben Ezer, says that at some point in the wedding, you must tell the Kala, Kala Nava Chasuda. What's the problem, though? Maybe you never went to such a wedding, but what if you go to such a wedding where... In your opinion, not the Chassan's opinion, he thinks he's marrying the most beautiful woman in the world, but in your opinion, she's
not
Coyote Ugly, right? So, what do you do? I have to tell her and lie through my teeth that I think you're beautiful, even though I think that that's not true? So you can say, no, there's no such thing as an ugly bride. Every bride is beautiful, and every bride, right? You agree?
Oh, I guess you just lie.
Yeah, why not just lie?
Yeah, I don't find her physically attractive.
Yeah, it's the Tosafot that says that. You say you're beautiful, you're internally beautiful, but I'm not telling you what I think. You are internally beautiful. What if you don't even think that? You know, a bride has to have people. She's sitting in that big wicker chair, or all the girls are on the side. No one's coming up to line up because they're more interested in the sushi because she's ugly. Come on, everybody's got to. You've got to tell her something, no? You know, at the wedding, you're all lined up. They all line up to say word to her while the chassan's in the tish. So Beis Hillel says, take a look. So, Beis Shammai says first, kala kemoshi. Kala, right? Beis Shammai says, tell her what you think. Kemoshi. Well, don't tell her anything at all. And don't pick on something. Oh, your nail polish is so beautiful. The chopped liver molds are so nice. You know, she wants to know how beautiful she is. She needs to hear it, right? That's the song, right? That's where it comes from. In fact, in Simon Nunei and Abed Ezra, it says you have to tell the Kala those words at some point during the wedding. Right? So look at the Shachar of Tari Gemara. Source number three, everybody, look with me. If she was crippled or ugly or blind or something, you have to tell her that you're gorgeous? Hey! Hello, look at this. This is not Mahom. Look what Bishamai is telling me. By the way, if you look, maybe I have some places I didn't see. But if there's a sefer you should be familiar with. It's called Torah Haksuva Vahmesura. It's a four-volume work. One on Torah, one on Vim, one on Ksuvim, and then the supplementary volume that the son of the author wrote. And it gives you a list of Sukkim and Tanakh from Bereshit for Elokim straight through every Pasuk in Tanakh, except for the Bereshit and Moshe Limoris. And it tells you all the places where this Pasuk is brought down anywhere. Now with computers, it's probably, you know, easy to do. But it's an old book. Right? So if you look up Mikvah Sheker Tzirchak and look to Shachru, you know what you'll find? The 30 or so Mamre Chazal where this Pasuk appears? everyone but this says that it's talking about lying in court. This is the only source where you will find the Parshat Tirkan or Lo Tishakru where the pasuk refers to general lying outside of court. Beis Shammai says if you tell an ugly bride that you think she's beautiful, you are lying, don't do it. It's almost like Immanuel Kant, who has a categorical comparative of lying. Come on, Beis Hillel says. Cut the guy some slack. Amalan Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. The Divrei Chemisha Lokach Vekach Rav in Ashok Yishabchen Beinav or Yigen Beinav. Be a good person. If no one is going over to her to tell her how beautiful she looks, think of how bad she feels. Tell her, alright, I'm lying, okay. The Korban Sana says, pick on something you think is beautiful. Tosfos says, say you're beautiful, and you mean, like you said before, you mean you're beautiful on the inside. Right?
But those justifications are saying that you can never lie to make someone happy.
Right, so Beis Shammai, you know, clearly the Gemara in Yevamos is Ali ben Beis Hillel. By the time these Amoraim are talking about those three cases where God himself told Shmuel to lie, or Yosef's brothers lied, or other things, that's an Amora talking from Mitzad the Beis Hillel. In fact, the Ritva says that the earliest source of this is actually this Gemara Ksubas, because it's very early, Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, is before Rabbi Yeshua, before Rabbi Akiva, before Rabbi Lezer, before, you know, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. This is very early. That we already have the idea that you can lie in order to be Mavur of Imabrios, which is another way of saying Mishnei Hashalom. Right? The Rishash makes a diuk here. The Rishash says, wait a second. If someone buys something from the shuk, why do you have to say you buy something from the shuk and it's a bad purchase? Should you tell him it's good or should you tell him it's bad? Make him feel good. Wait a second. The Gemara tells us that if someone buys a bad product, you should tell them it's bad so we can return it. What are you talking about, Beis Hillel? You know what I'm saying? What do you mean you should say, oh, this is such a beautiful car you bought? No, it's not. It's a lemon. Return it. Why do you have to say, Akon Nadavar bin Ashok? Just say, Akon Nadavar. So this is the deal. Rishash makes these kind of deal. I don't know. Shat Gemara. Rishash says that the divrechem Beis Shammai, you hold in Maseches Gittin that a man is not allowed to marry, to divorce his wife, unless she is having an affair. That's Beis Shammai's opinion. According to Beis Hillel, a man is allowed to divorce his wife for anything. So what's the point of telling the truth? So that the husband can return his wife? What's the point? See, for me, marriage is not like the shuk. What's the shuk? The shuk is in town for one day, and then it goes on. You get it? If this guy bought a bad purchase in the shuk, should I tell him it's a bad purchase or not?
No.
No, because he can't return it. The shuk moved on. I don't know that. Know where to get the guy who sold it to him. You get it? Marriage, to you, Beis Shammai, is like the shuk. Where you can't return the object. Unless she's having an affair. Right? Unless it's a Dvar Erevo. But me, I hold there might be even some practicality to tell the chassan what an ugly wife he has. But even I say that you should try to be poor of Mabrios. You see, it's a diuk on why he said shuk, and why he told him the false charge that you shouldn't tell someone that he bought something that's faulty. To the chosin, she's not faulty. To you, in your opinion, she's ugly. To him, she's not ugly. Maybe she is, and she's got a lot of money. I don't know, you know what I'm saying?
But according to Bissell, you could divorce or whatever.
Yes, so. Right? Even I say you should tell her, make him feel good and say she's beautiful and everything about her is beautiful. From here, we learn, by the way, what Rishash is saying is that if someone's going out with someone and you know something, you know, let's have the... You know, girls seeing someone who's very abusive, right? So at least she should be aware of some of it. And if she insists, okay, I'm informed. I don't want to be informed after there's a wedding and then he's not giving me a get and I'm chained to an abusive husband. There is a din, that's lo sama lo dam re'acha. But once she's informed and she knows really, okay. Alright, one of these others, this, look at source number four. This is a Gemara also in Yevamos. Okay? There the Gemara says that Rav was married to a very contrary woman. If he'd say he wants lentils, he'd get rice. If he says it's sunny, she'd prove that it's raining. She was just contrary. You know, people like this, they're just, sometimes they get along well this way, but whatever it is. Rav was married to such a woman. There are other Gemaras that talk about his relationship with her, but whatever it is, here it is. One time he says to his son, "Son, can you ask mom for some rice?" He asked for lentils, Rav got his rice, and he said, "Ah, your mother's doing tshuva, she gave me what I wanted." And the son said, "Dad, calm down. I asked for lentils, that's why you got your rice." He said, "My son, you're very smart, but you told a lie. You told mom I wanted X and I wanted Y." And it says in the Pasuk, look at the Pasuk in quotes, I underlined it. Source number 4, you looking at it? Limdu lishonam daber sheker. They're teaching their sons to lie. It's a Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. They teach their sons to lie. So the Marshal and the Marshal ask, and the Iyun Yaakov asks, why did it quote this Pasuk in Yirmiyahu when it should have quoted the Pasuk in the Torah? Why didn't Rav quote from the Torah? Which Pasuk? Lo Tishakru! My son, but you told a lie to your mother! And it says in the Torah, Lo Tishakru. It's a Klal Gadol Chevra. Shas always prefers to quote from the Torah than from the Ramitzum, if it can make its point equally. Unless this Pasuk in Yirmiyahu does not make the point. What did I say before about the Sforno? Remember the Sforno's main word? Shelo yilamed l'shaker. The Marshal answers that even when lying in the interests of peace, it can't be in a way that this lie will lead to another lie. Or that the person you lied to is going to find out. That gets the Aaron thing. I think that the mission and message must be not disagree with that. Source number 2 above. Because it's likely that the person he lied to is going to find out that he lied and how we came to be friends again. You mean he didn't say that? You made that up, Aaron? Okay, I hate him again. No, by that time, they'll be friends again. Stop. Right? But why didn't Rav quote the Torah? So that's the answer. Because look at the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. They're doing the Shonam on the Abba Sheker. They're teaching the children to lie. That's the Gemara in Sukkah, beautiful Gemara in the Daf Yomi. It's just this week, the Daf Yomi says, don't ever tell your children you're going to give them a reward or a punishment unless you're ready with the reward or punishment. Because if you promise a reward and don't come through, they will learn to lie. And they will not take you seriously.
So the difference between lying and scary?
Don't lie to scare either. If you don't come now, I'm leaving you here all night. Really? The parent is going to leave the child in the grocery store all night after they close? Really? Don't even threaten that, because you know you're never going to do that. If you don't drive safely, I'm going to kill you. Really? No, I hear parents say that. They say, I'm going to kill you. If you don't cross right now, I'm going to kill you. Really? No, you think it's funny, but children learn very quickly. Children know hypocrisy, they learn very quickly. But you told me you were going to do that. Oh, yeah, but I like it. That's called Limdu Lashonam Dabar Sheker. It's an Aftar of Tisha B'Av, and it's a big point of the Tisha B'Av Aftar about the deception in Israel at the time. Okay? So that's why Rav, what could Rav's son tell him, "Dad, I'll tell you why I switched around the rice and lentils, because I wanted to maintain peace between you and mom. Didn't God do that between Avram and Sarah?" Why couldn't Rav give that answer? Why couldn't Rav's son give that answer? Because if I do this, mom, I'm going to have to be there, Dad. I'm going to have to be there always between you and mom. Right? And I'm going to always have to lie. It's going to be habitual lying. That's the answer you have to give a child if he cheats on a test. And he comes home and his parents are very disappointed in him. And he was cheating all his life. He said, "But I know he gave you knowledge that I did well in school. That's why I did it. From my standpoint, though, I wouldn't have done it." But, by the way, this happens a lot. The kids are motivated. They're great kids. And the Rebbe gives them such kavod when they know the parshas by heart. And one time, they're so afraid of not knowing it because their knowledge is great. They're very motivated. but the moral system is not Holmes. So the 6 or 7 year old yeshiva bachur was given the choice between continuing to give his rebbe nachas, continuing to give his parents nachas, and cheating and lying is not honed so well. The child will choose continuing to give the nachas over the immorality of lying. So we have to be very careful. Parents have to be very smart, and rebbeim have to be very smart about this.
So it's a society.
Yes, yeah, society in general. Right? I say especially to young children, because with you, all right, you're already in a moral stage in your life where you can balance it. But the 6 or 7 year old, very not, very much not so. Understand? So here, Rav would tell his son, if he had said, "Dad, if it was good for God, why isn't it good for me?" Because my son, the Gemara here in Yevamos chose Limdu Lashon, and Rav chose this pasuk in Yirmiyahu because it has that Lashon Limdu. Becomes habitual. Now maybe you're allowed to habitually lie in order to maintain someone's health. A 97-year-old woman who lost a son, who wonders why he's not calling me anymore, they may keep telling her, "No, he's okay, he's alive, in order not to, which is certainly a habitual lie. Right? Which is a lie that's going to continue. Right? It's a lie that continues on and on. You have to keep telling a lie and lying and lying. Right? I actually know someone, and this is a crazy story, I don't want to tell you, she lost a son and her husband at the same time, one after shortly after the other, and she is one of many sisters, and her closest sister passed away years ago. And she still thinks she's alive. Everyone is always in the hope. So it's becoming like a charade, how they try to, "Why didn't she come to my grandson's bris?" And they constantly tell her, convince her she's alive.
How old is she?
The '80s.
Is that the right thing to do?
I don't know. That's what family chose to do.
I don't
think it's such a wise thing either. But right? I'll tell you. But remember, a lie has such a long memory. And the other sources here on this page talk about other cases in Shas. Where a person is like given permission to lie, and a question about this in source number 5, where a rabbi is coming into town, and two of his students are leaving town. And the rabbi says, "Oh, my students are coming to meet me, how nice." And one of them says, "I'm sorry, we didn't know you were coming." Right? And he's dejected, went to. So the other one says, "Why couldn't you just at least tell him that you came out to greet him?" You know, because he said, "Because that would be lying." He said, "No, we wouldn't be lying to him. He's lying to himself. He's the one who said it. I agree, we shouldn't tell him, 'Oh, Rebbe, so nice to see you, we came out with it.'" Because you're not supposed to create a false sense of indebtedness. Right? Someone's coming to your house, don't open up a new barrel of wine and make him think, "Wow, you opened up a new barrel for me," if you have 95% of it sold to a vendor tomorrow. You have to tell him that. Because otherwise, when you come to his house, he's going to think he has to open up a new barrel for you. Don't create a false sense of indebtedness. This happened to me actually once. I was lost on my way to a funeral. This was before GPSs and cell phones. And I stopped off into this out of the run-of-the-mill hospital along the Grand Central Parkway. It was such a... this was 1983 or 82. And they had on a chalkboard the names of the patients at the front desk. This was a hospital by 30 people. And I see on the chalkboard someone I knew. And they're like, the guy's still alive. His 90s. And I stopped over in the room, and he's just so taken aback that I came to visit him. He said, "No one knows that I'm here. That I come from St. Joseph's, but Rabbi, I'm so happy that you came." I said, "Shabbat Shalom." I said, "Look, I'm going to tell him." He's still around, Baruch Hashem. And did I tell him? Right now, I had his laws, and I just happened to see him. I didn't tell him that. I didn't tell him that I came here specifically to see you. I told him the truth. God brought me to see you. Because no one knows but me in my life. I just came here for a small procedure. I'm here for a few days. And I'm so thrilled that you came." Right? So he's the one who came up with this. Not me. Right? You agree? So do this stuff. Include this. This is how I'll answer the question. This is quite a long story. My father's entire family is like that. He has an older sister, had children, all killed, every brother, sister, parents. And he only found out in the late 70s that his sister's husband survived. He never knew. Right? How did he find out?
because in the 70s, Yad Vashem started to make survivalists, and the guy had such an odd name that when he saw it on a list, he said, this has to be him. Right? Kassil Einwoiner. How about Kassil Einwoiner? He saw the name, and he made the research, and he found that it was him. And Russia would not leave, because he had some connection to the army, and he said they didn't know that anyone with connection to the army. He was a tailor for army jackets. So they thought that he has state secrets because he might have camaraderie with some of the soldiers. So a New York senator got him out of it. In a few years, we finally got him out. He came to America. My father found him a wife, a job, a house, everything. We adopted him. We called him. He's the only uncle I ever had on that side of the family. Right? So his uncle was here. So he died. He was about 92, 93 when he died, some years back. So I went to the nearest neighborhood, the Forest Hills, along Queens Boulevard. There's a place called Parkside there. And I went to arrange his funeral. And I had the check ready to write out. I had the amount ready. I'm writing it out. He says, the last question is your relationship to the deceased. I said, he's my uncle. So he said, how was he your uncle? He says, he was married to my father's sister. So he said, well, that's not a blood relative. You can't do this. So I said, I don't get it. He doesn't have a will. And if you don't have a will determining who should take care of your funeral, you can't arrange a funeral. So I said, who has to arrange a funeral? He goes, public administrator. He goes, how long does that take? About a week. So I said, well, listen, what I don't get is it was only a blood relative, which means a spouse or a direct line, child, grandchild, can take care of a funeral of someone who doesn't have a will. So I said, the Hitler did an excellent job of making sure this man didn't have any blood relatives. What am I supposed to do? Even my father's not a blood relative.
Since you said he was married.
So that little man passed away before. So I didn't know what to do. I called the head of the Chevra Kadisha in Queens, a very famous man who's really one of the great Chevra Kadisha leaders of the world, actually. His name is Lachon Zon. I don't want tape. I don't want to get him in trouble. So, all right. It's over already. What am I going to do? So he said, "Listen, that's the law in New York. The funeral hall can get into trouble if they take care of this with someone who's not a blood relative." So I said, "This can't be. I can't let this guy, after all he's been through, to wait a week and a more before they do the funeral. It's crazy." He said, "Well, that's the law." He goes, "Don't you have any advice for me?" He goes, "Yeah, I have advice for you. Go to another place, and when they ask you that question, say you're the grandson." Which is exactly what I did. If anybody knows Queens Boulevard, two, three blocks up, well, more than that, maybe seven or eight blocks up, on the other side of the street, is a place aptly called Schwartz Brothers. So I have a funeral there. But let me tell you what the point is. I'm telling you this because a lie has a long memory. In my eulogy for him, I refer to him throughout as Zaidi Kassil. Because if I had referred to him as Uncle Kassil, they would have stopped the funeral right there and put it back to the public administration. People were asking me, why are you constantly referring to him as Zaidi? He's not your grandfather. I said, well, yes, today he is. He didn't ask me for ID proof to us that you're his grandson. I just said he's my grandfather. That was it. I had to make sure he's my mother's father. It doesn't matter. I'm going to Schwartz. He's my mother's father. So Baruch Hashem is he has two big tombstone fan on my shul property, right? That's 10 feet away from my mother's still. My whole family is all in the same place. So a nice way to bring everyone back together like this. One other survivor managed to make it out of the war. So, but I'm just telling you that if I had said Uncle Kassil, I know someone who lost, he was fired from a job because he worked for a speech-making company where he teaches people how to give speeches. And he's under contract that he's not allowed to teach anybody how to make speeches except through that company. We own you. Ready to sign? At his wedding,
the boss of the company was there, and his nephew gave a speech. And he goes, I'd like to thank blah, 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 blah for helping me out. He says, they fired him. Well, he was it's crazy. Anyway, I was told afterwards, they had gotten wind that you lied to them and said you're the grandson, not the uncle. They would stop the funeral there and not let you bury him.
What about
that? I'm just saying, because you have to be careful. A lie? Oh, yeah. Oh, now they're going to go in the Zoom, right? 20 years later. So, take that.